Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock.
Chris Things here. You've tuned into another edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am that host, Chris Things, Brian. I'm a wrestling dude. I'm an art dude. I'm a podcast host, I guess. I'm an interview dude, and that's what I'm going to be doing today, because you have tuned in to a special edition, curator edition of the show, where I take off my hat as a artist, and more turn to the interview side of things, and I talk to other rad wrestling artists. This week is a little bit different because I am talking to a gentleman who started out as a client, but at this stage I think I'd consider him a dear friend. And he is the creator of a wonderful art installation project, I guess you'd call it. Some other people might call it a basement passion project, which I love so much. Yes, we have Richard Beardsley of Videoplant on the show today to talk all about this aforementioned project. To talk about his wrestling video collection, art curation elements, and all sorts of the weird and wonderful side of VHS nostalgia, B grade culty schlocky movie goodness, and just the wonderful passion that goes into all this stuff. So I am very enthused about this interview coming up. A little editor's note here. You might at the start of the interview notice Richard's audio is not the best, but rest assured it improves very quickly. And I think it was just a delightful chat. I had a lot of fun, so very much looking forward to that one. On to now, that's coming up in a brief moment, but now we've got our What's Going On in the World of Chris Things segment, and I have some very exciting developments for you. Well, first off the bat, this Saturday I'm going to be selling my wares, having my art on display at a Mexican wrestling show. Yeah, Lucha Fantastica here in Brisbane. It's a Mexican wrestling show. It's a variety show. It's just a fun night out where you get to drink a bunch of tequila, eat some tacos, watch some dudes in masks and spandex jump on each other. How does it get better than that? So I'll be there, Lucha Fantastica, this Saturday night in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. Super Ordinary is the venue. You can find out all of the deets. Jump on the old Instagram at Chris Things. You can check out Lucha Fantastica from there. But I think it's going to be a great time, and this is a really exciting thing for me. I think previously I mentioned how great an experience some of my previous in-person art kind of things have been so far. Late last year I had the Oddities and Curiosities Expo. That was just wonderful. More recently we had the Netherworld Wrestling Art Show. Also had the Great Artist Market not long ago, but all these things have been just so great because I think one of my favorite parts of the art now is getting to meet people face to face, meet you guys, talk about the art, nerd out about the wrestling. It's a great time, and you know, it's like I've said before, even a whole different level of enjoyableness when it's people who have no idea about wrestling, and then they're, you know, getting into it and being like, I don't really know what this is about, but I dig these bulbous, sweaty, oily, fat men in spandex that you are drawing. And to that I say thank you, and I'm like, yeah, I'm happy about that. But yeah, so I'm very much looking forward to that. I honestly don't know what it's going to be like in terms of from an art sales perspective. It's all sort of a bit of a learning experience at this stage. I think the kind of people that want to go along and check out some Mexican wrestling are probably my kind of people that would dig my stuff. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know next week how that's gone. So come along to that if you're in the Brisbane area this weekend. Also, I've been jumping back into our upcoming Way of the Blade, the AEW edition. A little sneaky update for you guys. We've actually had a few sneaky last minute additions to that book. I guess wanting to make it a little bit more current. I'm sorry, I can't quite reveal which matches I've been doing or been, you know, sorting out, but they made me very happy to do, I'll say that. Hopefully that book's going to be coming out in the near future. I'll keep you posted all on that. But on the road to that big release, I'm still doing my look back at some of the key favorite illustrations from the original book, the original Way of the Blade. This past week, I posted a bloody dandy of a match, a gem. I don't have to tell you how much I love Big Van Vader. Also, so much love for Cactus Jack. So getting to do this one again, when I saw that on Phil's list, oh my gosh, you know, from Foley's book, when he talked about, like, in this match, actually telling Vader he wanted him to punch him in the face for real in this match to really put it to that next level. I mean, like anyone needs to request such a thing from Vader, man, and he sure as heck did. Oh, so much so that it ended up being edited or censored off of the WCW Saturday Night Television broadcast. But thankfully, later on in a WWE documentary, they uncovered the footage. And it was actually from that footage that I picked that the visual inspiration, I guess, for this illustration of Cactus's face just kind of exploding with blood. But yeah, that was a very, very fun one, and everyone please check out that match. I could rave about that for a whole episode, but I can't. I think we're about at this time. I think it's time to wrap it up, and I hope you're ready for a little bit of wrestling art curator action. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited today. We've got another of our curator episodes here, and our curator guest coming up is a great one. A little bit different than some in the past, because this gentleman is, a curator himself of a wonderful art installation project that's just an amazing, loving, nostalgia-filled trip down memory lane to the video rental stores of yesteryear that, you know, I have very close to my heart, and I'm sure a lot of you guys do as well. A videotape sanctuary that most definitely has a wrestling section, and an awesome one at that, and a whole variety of rad custom art and all sorts of cool knickknacks. But before I go on too much, welcome to the show, Richard Beardsley of Videoplant.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dude, no, I'm stoked. I'm super excited. As I've said to you before, I'm so pumped that the video plant is all up and it's live and it's doing the things.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, it's been a couple of years now building this thing out with my wife, but and I've been part of it working on the logo, and so it's good to finally have it in a way that can share it with others.
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, so before we get too much further, I want to direct everyone to video.plant on Instagram. That's a, sort of the main hub where we can all keep up with the project. Yeah, before we get too much into it, I honestly just want to say a big thank you to you, Richard. For all our listeners at home, you know, you actually commissioned me to create a bunch of really cool stuff for Video Plant, including the logo that I'm just so proud of, and it's just totally an honor to get to be part of it, and you know. I think a lot of people know, you know, on this podcast, I don't, you know, like I'm doing this art thing, you know, full time, well, I'm trying to, and it's, you know, it's basically like my life's dream to get to do this thing, and to honestly to get to do this kind of work that we are doing with like these different video plant, projects, it's so cool. And I really like look forward to every single one. It's like for the kind of things to the stars to align, to where, you know, you're really kind of like pretty niche kind of interests like match up so well with those of my own, you know, the culty B grade goodness, or and as well as like a lot of the wrestling stuff too. It's honestly just a dream to get to do this kind of stuff. And you know, like I said when I did a little post for the, you know, the announcement of the video plant and the logo and that, you know, it I more so than like standard commission kind of stuff, I do look at everything that we do for video plant. It's like kind of more like a collaboration, if anything. So I'm just so stoked to be part of it, man. And to have my stuff enshrined in Video Plant is just so cool. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So happy that it all worked out. Big fan of all of your artwork. It's fun when we find other artists to collaborate with, showcase their passion. Yeah, I'm such a big fan of you and all of your work, so I was just so happy. Like, yeah, let's do this. So you also did, you know, I think the first thing you did was Andy Kaufman, him being managed by Tony Clifton. I have that in my office, but yeah. So it's been fun to bounce ideas off each other, and I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Oh, dude, no, thank you. I might get you to, if you could maybe turn up your audio a little bit or get a little closer to the mic, that might be good. But yeah, dude, the Andy and Tony piece, that was definitely something I had on my notes here to talk about. That's like such an example of like one of these kind of like things where as soon as you approach me to be like, could we do like a piece with like Andy Kaufman, you know, during his like Memphis run as a wrestler, being managed of all people by his other alter ego Tony Clifton. And you know, Tony's got like a great kind of like almost like classy Freddie Blassie kind of like vibe going on anyway, so I thought that's so perfect for him to be the manager, so it's just so good.
Awesome. Is this audio better?
Oh yeah, this is perfect.
Okay, really good. Cool. Oh good, good.
Where did you get that idea from?
Well, I'm just a big Andy Kaufman fan. He was kind of my first. When I was in high school, I was really into comedy, and the video store that I worked at actually had
an Andy Kaufman tape. It was my breakfast with Blassie, actually.
Nice.
And at that time, I think it was before The Man on the Moon with Jim Carrey came out. So on TV, they were showing a lot of, there was like this Andy Kaufman kind of revival. And so I just started watching a lot of him and kind of fell in love with his performance art, I guess. And I just became a fan. So I just thought, when I looked at your art, I thought, gosh, you know, here's somebody who could kind of make something come, who can definitely make something come to life. So I thought, why not have Tony? Because, you know, there was that duality where he would be Tony Clifton and then somebody else would play him, Bob Zmuda. So that never happened, of course, probably for certain reasons. But it would have been really cool. And so, yeah, it was fun to see it come to life.
Yeah, I loved it. I ended up for the actual illustration part of that one. Cause like, you know, for all of my stuff, I do, you know, start, you know, pen on paper, even for the digital illustration kind of stuff. But for the actual illustration, I think it was during vacation sort of camping thing that we did away on the beach. So I was just like chilling on the beach, you know, drawing like Andy Kaufman and Tony Clifton. And it's just so much fun, as like all of these are.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, that was the fun thing when I first started going through your Instagram feed. I just went on like I just started scrolling further and further, and I saw the mega pickles, all the creative different outputs you had. So I felt pretty comfortable asking you if you wanted to do the Andy and Tony thing. So I'm glad it worked out.
For sure. I think going back to the start of the video plant concept, I guess a lot of this just started as a result of a collection of yours. So, you know, I assume you've been collecting for a long time, and then at a certain point, like, did you kind of decide, maybe I could do something with this kind of deal, or what?
Yeah, it's kind of, well, I would say I always... You know, I worked at a video store in high school, and I always loved the VHS format. And even when I started kind of making my own kind of movies, I went to film school when I was for college. And so in college, I used to want to play around with the VHS format quite a bit. And that was around like the late 2010s. And around that time, I started just getting the some of the tapes that I had, like recollecting them, because you could get them, you'd find them everywhere at like thrift stores. But it was just like very specific tapes. There was like the Slumber Party Massacre was one I wanted to track down, and like David Cronenberg movies, like Videodrome. But then as I started to collect them, like it was probably the mid to like, you know, like 2013, 2014, the whole, you know, VHS revival thing started to happen. And I think it was just a phenomenon that was happening everywhere. People with like streaming platforms and just, you know, really cheap DVDs. I think people started to kind of miss the like the artwork on the tapes, the boxes and the descriptions. And by that time, DVDs and even Blu-rays were just having like a mass produced look to them. So I just started to collect them for that reason, but I didn't have a lot of space for them. And then of course, like during the pandemic, I just started to kind of, you know, form a new hobby and collecting specific tapes, and it grew and grew. And then my wife and I moved to, we moved to a house with a basement, and there was this room, and I thought, I was like, can I build a video store, in this room? And she's like, sure, I don't see why not. So that was always my dream, to have a video store. And then of course, you know, that streaming came along. So it was kind of a mix of those two things. But yeah, but it did start with wrestling tapes. That's when I really started to get into collecting. Cause when I started collecting the wrestling tapes, you could find them they're really cheap. And I would find them. Those were kind of like a more of it was like a hobby. I'd go out and I'd see, you know, like a random like WCW tape and a WWF tape. And it just started to blossom. And then I started to find track them down on the internet when they were still pretty cheap, but now they're expensive. So I'm glad I kind of I'm glad I got out the bulk of my tapes before, or you know, now.
Yeah, good job on that one. I think there's such a love, you know, that I have, and you see that in a lot of people now, just for that sort of like physical media element of this kind of stuff. And you know, I can't tell you the amount of times I've had, you know, drunken conversations with friends and saying how much I miss that video store experience.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, getting to walk down an aisle and look, and I think being a very a visual person myself, like that sort of like the amount of effort gone into every one of those covers. You know, both just, you know, general kind of like different movies and different genres of movies, especially like, don't get me started on like horror movies and how cool that kind of stuff is. But then especially when you'd go into the wrestling section of a lot of these stores, and even more so than sort of your big kind of, you know, your blockbuster chains or things like that, I'd find it would normally be like the weird, more kind of like little small scale mom and pop kind of like video stores that would, you could tell someone that worked there really loved wrestling because they'd put so much effort into like the whole wrestling section, basically like a shrine to wrestling. And just some of those weird, amazing, you know, visuals of the covers of the especially like the I think 80s to early 90s is probably my favorite era of those wrestling VHS tapes. Like I got a bit of a collection of them myself.
Awesome.
Definitely nothing you know compared to yours, but man, there's so much to love with all of that stuff, hey.
Oh, I totally agree. The colors, the typography, the Coliseum video tapes. I remember there was like a sports section at the video store I worked at. It was called the Movie Shack, and they had the big box Coliseum video. I'm looking at my wall now to see which ones, if I can remember which ones they were, but like the Royal Rumble 1990. I remember they had that and. Mm. I would just stare at the boxes when I was in high school, I wasn't watching wrestling and I had fallen out of, you know, growing up as a kid, it was, you know, like 1992 era, you know, like, you know, I was into the WWF, like it was part of pop culture, you know, it just was on TV.
Probably the time when Hulkamania was going against like Sergeant Slaughter and the whole Gulf War thing.
Absolutely. And I had a friend who loved wrestling that I would like go to his house for like on a Friday night and watch for sleepovers, and he would watch wrestling. And I remember honestly, I would watch it with him just as a participant. And like as a good sport, but it wasn't really appealing to me. Also, I had an older brother who, when I was into it, when I was younger, who would tease me, he'd be like, "Oh, you know, it's not real," that kind of thing. but when I was at my friend's house, I just remember he watched Sting. I mean, he watched WCW. And I remember noticing when I was young, like, oh, the production quality is different on like TNT or whatever. I think it was Turner. And but I remember that had Sting on, and I remember like Ric Flair, and I remember there being that difference. But when I worked at the video store, I remember going through, because I would just by the time I was working at the video store, the blockbusters in Hollywood had become more popular, so there wasn't as much foot traffic. So I just would just, you know, walk down the aisles and try to find the weirdest stuff I could find to take home. But I remember going through the wrestling section and looking and being like, wait a second, and seeing, you know, the Hollywood Hogan, and there was actually the tape where he's strangling the Ultimate Warrior in WCW, and I was like, what? And I remember talking to a friend and he's like, oh yeah, Hulk Hogan's in WCW now, and WCW is bigger than WWF, and my mind was blown. And that was during the, you know, the Monday Night Wars, and So that was also, that era was also obviously a big part of pop culture, but you know, I wasn't into it at that point. It was later on when I started to kind of really dive into all the elements, like the camp, the performance aspect, the comedy, and also just kind of like, there's like an artistry in it that I find when I'm obsessed with wrestling now. That's like my biggest obsession. I try to watch a match a day, but I think it all kind of blossomed from in the video store looking at these boxes and kind of obsessing over them, and of course the ringmasters and like the Lords of the Ring and like the darker, bloodier tapes, they had those too, and so it was a fascination.
That's so cool. Like, I mean, my journey into wrestling was very similar, I think.
Okay.
You know, back in the day, you know, because we didn't have much of it on like TV in Australia. Mm. Like, it was quite of a, there was like kind of a dark period where even though it was massive at the time, it didn't really air, other than I think they had like a pay TV channel that they eventually got it on. But then, you know, and we didn't have pay TV as kids. But the biggest exposure to it was going to these little video stores. Wow. And again, sort of seeing him out of like effort of earn this, like almost felt like a glowing shrine to wrestling. You'd be like, what is this stuff? and yeah, it was all the bright colors and the weird, you know, roided up, oiled up physiques and like face paint and all this like kind of thing. Just seeing like, I can't remember what cover it is. It might have even been the Mania in Toronto with Ultimate Warrior and Hogan on like either sides of it, and like Warrior's got like lightning and man, it's like for someone that loves visual kind of stuff, it just blew my mind.
Oh, absolutely. Was there a wrestler? Were there a handful of wrestlers that when you started watching it that you were initially drawn to?
Oh, yeah. I think the more freakish, weird-looking ones have always been, you know, a big fan of mine. I distinctly remember the first ever match that I actually saw was between Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Yokozuna. And this is probably during like the early 90s WWF period, so you had this like very American guy with a 2x4 and the, you know, exaggerated sort of like Japanese sumo who's not actually even Japanese.
Right.
And just I was like, what even is this wild world? And in two, you know, iconic looks of guys, I think that was a big part of it. And then, yeah, getting into your, you know, Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. And then, yeah, I finally, you know, discovered WCW a little bit later on as well. And it was definitely, yeah, you're more visual kind of dudes initially, like, you know, Sting and, yeah, when Warrior went to WCW and all that kind of stuff. So, and then, you know, as I've, you know, progressed on and, you know, we've gotten into different things in Japanese wrestling and then really getting into more retro stuff, which I think these days my real kind of like passion for wrestling lies in your, you know, your either territory stuff or stuff from like the 70s and 80s from Japan. And again, it comes back to those like weird, you know, freakish visuals of like, there's no one on earth that really looks quite like Abdullah the Butcher.
You know? Absolutely.
Like Bruiser Brody or Giant Baba, like just these weird looking dudes that to me, that's the magic of wrestling in a big way.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I started to branch out from that, it's the same kind of thing, you know, growing up, having the WWF and WCW just part of pop culture and having access to that is one thing, but when I started to really get into wrestling, it kind of reminds me of like when I would get in, like, I don't know, if you start listening to jazz, like free jazz, and you want to, you know, like, I don't understand jazz, but like, oh, I want to hear like all these different types of records and try to understand, you know, music or movies, trying to get to like the fringe stuff. The like, what's at the bottom of the barrel? What's the stuff that maybe isn't, I've never heard of, you know, the stuff you could kind of discover. And I remember I came across, there's this place in town that I go to, and it was right before the pandemic. I went into this, it's like this record store, and in the back they have all these VHS tapes. And around that time, I was looking to learn more. Like, I was looking to discover like wrestling that wasn't as widely popular. And just by chance, I was at the front counter, and the owners, there's these two guys who own it. They said, "Hey, we've got, you like wrestling tapes. We got two bags of these tapes right here." And in that bag, they had the Abdul the Butcher, Who's Next, and the Bruiser Brody, those, the Puerto Rico,
awesome.
They're like pink, they're the clamshell tapes. And I looked at the covers, and I was like, "Oh my God. Oh my God." Like, I bought all of them on the spot. And I remember taking them home and putting the tapes in, and they're just these, you know, grimy, that the, you know, that you put it in. I popped the tape in, and it was, the logo came on, and it's just this gritty, lo-fi, but also very awesome presentation. And that tape with Abdul the Butcher was this, this, that pure adrenaline of, being kind of mesmerized and sucked in. He's like eating a chicken. it's just the weird promos. It felt it, you know, it's like, it felt real, you know, and it, and it is real in a certain way, but, yeah, I just was totally mesmerized by that. But that's what I'm seeking. Kind of like you're just talking about earlier is like, what's at the bottom of the barrel? And what I mean, not like in a negative way, but, you know, just what can I sift through and find? What kind of gold can I find? And I find that most of that gold in that 70s and 80s territory wrestling, like yourself. Of course, that isn't on like mass produced tapes, but now with the internet, you know, we can find as much as that as we really want.
Yeah, it's quite a really good time now for being able to find more of that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, I definitely had back in the day, like, you know, going through people's lists that they'd post on like an Angel Fire website, and then you know, paying them to burn those onto DVDs for me, kind of thing, and then being so excited when those DVDs would arrive in the mail, kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier now.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But I mean, the weird stuff is so where it's at. I mean, I don't even know how to really describe it, but there's like an excitement when you're sort of like, and I guess this goes for any kind of subculture, or niche interest kind of thing. Definitely in like your sort of like cult cinema kind of sense as well. But there's just such a joy that I think there is in you know, putting the work into something that you really love and delving a little bit below the surface, you know, and like, you know, for wrestling, getting a little bit deeper than the current, you know, WWE product or whatever that's presented on TV. Like, I think for a lot of people, there's a point where you're just like, this just isn't doing it for me anymore, you know? Like, I originally started watching kind of full-time WWF in probably like 1998. I distinctly remember sort of like the, you know, corporation feud against Mankind, and then, you know, Undertaker's ministry cult, and then it becoming the corporate ministry, and the feud with Austin and everything like that. Amazing. Vince being the higher power, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So just campy and ridiculous and weird. But then it just sort of like changed, and especially into the early 2000s, there was a lot of spots where there was still some really great professional wrestling and some you know, amazing people that worked there. But by and large, it just seemed like it was less fulfilling for me. Mm. And then, you kind of like delve a little bit deeper and look for different kind of stuff. And each one of those discoveries can just be such an exciting moment. Similar to what you were saying about that Abby tape, We used to have this amazing video store in Brisbane that's long since closed down. It was called Trash Video. And it was a tiny little place run by a guy that just loved weird cult cinema. And it had just, it got me into so much great stuff, like the whole sort of like blaxploitation genre and all sorts of old weird sci-fi thrillers and things like that. But of all things for the wrestling side of it, he had this old tape that was like some sort of best of New Japan World Pro Wrestling that was centered around Brody's matches with Inoki. And, oh, wow. And that was like mind-blowing for me to see at the time, and just to see a dude like Bruiser Brody in that entrance and the swing and the chain and everything. Like, man, so cool.
When you would go through the video store, would that experience, would you just kind of look at the box covers and you know, pick based on the cover and then turn it around and read it? Like, yeah, I guess, what was your experience like in terms of picking a movie? Was it based on the cover?
Yeah, I mean, so it'd vary a little bit. So whether it's a place you know, your normal sort of chain video store that I remember as a kid and as a teenager, we used to go to and have your, you know, cheap Dollar Tuesdays or whatever, where you'd go in and load up and get way more than you'd actually end up having time to watch all of. And I'd do a lot of that. And I would listen to, especially for all of the kind of like bigger movies, and then have all the audio commentaries. Every single one I'd watch, I'd also watch it with the director's commentary. And I think that got me into a lot of stuff. And then I'd like make little lists off of like a lot of the time, especially your more, you know, master kind of directors, they would get, you know, nerding out about how much they love cinema and like be talking about how different movies kind of inspired them. And then I'd be like, oh, well, I have to watch, you know, Deer Hunter, or I have to watch Clockwork Orange, or, you know, you get into different kind of stuff from that side of it. And it just goes on and on. But in terms of the being in the store side of it, yeah, primarily motivated by what captures you from like an artwork standpoint. Very similar to like records kind of thing too. And then you'd pick it up, and then you'd look at the back, you'd read the kind of like little blurb description that they got on there. And that's really a big part, like when we're talking about the love for physical media when it comes to this stuff. That's what I miss so much, that sort of like physical experience of picking up, have it in your hand. And even like getting back to some of those like horror kind of like movies and like 80s horror that have sort of like 3D kind of like puff elements of like some of the covers that were like so darn cool. I miss that stuff so much.
Oh, I'm with you. That's a big part of why I have this room is just, I mean, it's kind of silly in a way, because when we were making this space, I definitely had moments where I was like, what am I doing right now? But I realized like I can come down here and spend time with I can interact with the tapes. It might sound a bit weird, but just having I don't know, it's a comfort. It's a comfort to pick up a box and look at it. And even though I know what all these boxes and movies are, but you know, when people will come, I've noticed that they almost don't want to touch them. And I'm like, I want them to oh yeah, you know, look at the, you know, pick up a tape and look at it and look at the back of that one. And there's, you know, like the back of a Scanner sequel, there's three heads coming out of a single head and stuff like that. But the artwork was so weird and bombastic. We just don't have anything like that today. Everything's mass produced and kind of uniform.
Yeah, and it's like, how much effort is going into the cover for the, you know, the poster for a lot of this kind of stuff, especially your big budget blockbuster kind of stuff. It's all got the same general kind of like style, not really a lot of like personality going on. So, and it's funny, I think that kind of artwork that we're talking about is a lot of the stuff that inspires me as an artist. So getting to then be doing stuff to where that, I mean, I don't know how this kind of works, you know, whether that's something that, that you may saw or thought in the back of your head, and then that like attracted you to want me to do the stuff. But then, I don't know, it's just something that's so cool about when you, those kind of influences come and they become part of you, and then that then lets you do really cool stuff when other people kind of connect with that too.
Yeah, well, with your art, I just remember it just pulls me in. I love the all your color, your like pastel palette, your colorways, and
thanks, man.
When I got the book Way of the Blade, I think that's when I also was like, because I think I saw that on your Instagram. I really don't remember the order of how it all played out, but I remember getting that book and being like, oh my God, the black and white, all the inks, like everything looked so like, I don't know what the word, I mean, kind of beautiful in a way, because, but the simplicity of the black and white and then reading the words, the Schneider's words. It was like this perfect combo. And I just was like, wow, even in black and white, I think it just kind of drew me more to like the detail of your work. And then, and also your lettering is really cool. Like the way it like oozes and like, I don't know if what's the right word. There's like the dripping, maybe. I don't know. It sweats.
Basically, oozy kind of gooiness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always loved like I haven't always been the biggest fan of the Troma movies, but I've always appreciated the Troma, like the way that they put out movies, Lloyd Kaufman, how he, you know, all the covers and every phase of like the DVDs, their website. I remember going to their website in the early 2000s. Like everything they do has this quality that's very maybe lowbrow, but also kind of hyper, like neon. I don't know. Just the colors were really big, and then were really really impactful, and then all these different types of I could say campy elements, and so. I think with your stuff, when I was looking at all of the, we've talked about like our love for lowbrow art. I think I just, when I was thinking about the logo, I thought, gosh, I think this guy could really take it, make this logo what I hope it could be, based on kind of our love for kind of weirder presentation, maybe, if that makes sense at all. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny you say stuff like the, you know, Troma kind of like presentation.
Yeah.
You know, I love, you know, the original, like, Toxic Avenger. And, you know, all of the artwork associated with it, I always thought was so, so cool. Even down to, I'm not sure if you ever saw, like, there was a 90s animated cartoon.
Yes.
Based on it. And the visual, the visual presentation of that, I thought was so darn cool. I had, like, a whole, like, collection of some of the toys that they put out associated with that. It was so cool as well. But I think that's all the stuff. It's sort of like, just gets bottled up inside you, and then you just kind of like, it has to come out somewhere. So I think that's definitely big time influences for me.
Yeah.
But especially with and talking about the logo, you know, I love Little Shop of Horrors. So when you had that idea, I was like, man, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah.
And then I think the big fun part of it was, I just wanted to pack in as much you know, kind of like gnarly detail in it as possible, especially because I knew, you know, you mentioned you were going to get it printed up quite decent scale, and that generally lends itself well to, you know, you being able to sort of stare at it and, you know, notice all those little weird bits. But yeah, that was just another one. It's so fun to do, man. Thank you.
Thank you. It was perfect. When I saw it, I thought, I just was like, oh my God, you nailed it. This is exactly what, cause you know, when you go, making that commitment to have it made, I think it was really important. I think we talked about this, like, I kind of gave you an idea of what I was thinking, but then I was like, I'll let Chris do his thing. And it was such a rewarding experience to be a fan of something, to be a fan of your art and just know what your imagination is capable of and seeing what you come back with. And I think that's like the most rewarding aspect as like a fan of your art and having the space is being able to like bring another artist or bring an artist into it and have that art kind of bring life to the atmosphere when you walk into this space. So it was perfect when I saw it, and it's the first thing you see when you walk in is a giant, or it's pretty big, I mean, you know, a poster. And so I'm just so proud to have it in here, and I'm so grateful that you did it.
Dude, no, thank you. I sort of I'm so appreciative of your approach of sort of like, you know, allowing me that sort of like creative freedom on a lot of kind of stuff. Like, you talk about kind of like a dream client kind of thing. That to me, the real joy out of this is in the creativity kind of deal. So I think you have you bring just like a perfect level of like I love how much you sort of like give direction, but then you know, allow me to then, all right, so this is what I'm thinking now, you know, all right, you go on your own, you know, weird path with it kind of thing, and then, you know, come back and let's see what it is. I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, that's the way I've always approached. You know, I've got a bit of a collection of tattoos. You know, it's sort of a big thing whenever I travel overseas. I'll always get something of different places that I go or different artists that I look up to or things like that. And I approach it the same way. You know, I want to give them the freedom to sort of like, all right, this is what I had in mind, you just do your thing, you know, I just look forward to seeing what you come back with. I'm just so appreciative of getting to have that kind of like creative license, yeah, I guess, for this stuff, and I ultimately think it results in the work ending up a bit more sort of like alive, I guess.
Absolutely. I think that's with this space, that's kind of what I wanted it to be, is like, it's, I want this, like, so first of all, a couple of things. I'm very shy, nervous person, so I'm a bit nervous to doing this talk and chatting right now on a podcast. So
you're doing great, man.
Okay, but I'm happy to be here, and I've had a lot of fun, and we've chatted off the podcast, so I feel like I'm not on one, but I also am aware that I am. But with this room, it was never meant to be a public space. And it was meant to be kind of like a safe space, in the sense of like, oh, you know, I have a, like, the world is so intense, and with the internet and everything is so chaotic. And it's like, oh, if I could have like in my basement, a video store, and I could share it with my friends kind of thing. But as we started to do it, I just started pouring so much of myself into it. And you know, my partner, my wife, she was like, she kept pushing me to take it further and make it like an artistic experience.
Dude, I love that so much. I just want to say, like, I saw that, in a post that she did, and
oh yeah,
how I guess like she's, sort of like encouraged you through this, the idea, yeah, of like her sort of like encouraging you to chase your passions with this whole thing. I just thought it was like so heartwarming. It just made me smile so much. I love that for you guys.
Thank you so much. Well, she is also an artist. We both went to like art school, you know, and we try to like, you know, we're artists, we're like creator artists, in the sense that we like to, you know, make things in our free time, but we don't have ambition beyond that. It's creating for the sake of escaping into, you know, she does like quilting, and then I do a lot of video art, and I've been working on this space, and it's just the idea of like creating not for a return on an investment as much as it is like a soulful return on investment, as corny as that might sound. But when we did this space, okay, cool.
Because at the end of the day, that's what creating should be about. You know, that's the most important part. So much of the time, people get caught up in the end result of what they're doing, and like, all right, what is the purpose of what you're making? Like, I think the purpose of making ultimately is for the sake of just creating and the joy that you get out of doing it.
I couldn't agree. Yeah, I totally agree. It's good to get lost in something and kind of get into a flow state that makes you feel, I don't know, it's just a rewarding thing to have. And I don't think everybody always has that with everything going on. So I always want to encourage that in others, you know, if they can tap into it. And this space, I hope, brings that out for people, because like there's a place in Los Angeles that every time I'd have a shoot, I do producing on the side, like advertising. And every time I go to LA, I used to go there every once in a while. And I would go to this museum called the Museum of Jurassic Technology. And it's a place where there's no social media allowed, but you go into it and it's this crazy experience. It's kind of like, you know, in the movie Being John Malkovich, when you go into that portal, you're like, I feel like that. And I might've read that somewhere, or maybe that's just the way I feel. But yeah, it's this experience, and it's essentially like it's a art installation. And so when I was doing this in this room, I kept giving myself kind of like unintentional like boundaries. And my wife was like, I want to paint it pink, and I want to look like chewed bubblegum pink. And she's like, okay. And then so we got like all these different pinks to try out. I was very intentional about how to be like this specific, like faded chewed bubblegum pink. And then she's like, you should just paint the whole room monochromatic. So she, and I was like, okay. So like, I just kept doing it, kept pushing it and having it be more. So like every inch of this room is pink, even the screws, even the brackets. And then the shelves were, you know, everything took forever because it was the two of us. And, you know, and some friends who helped out along the way. But when it got to the it got to the point to have more than tapes, I really wanted there to be art in here that tied to the world, you know, because I wanted people to walk in and kind of have that installation feel that they had at the museum, that I had at Museum of Jurassic Technology. So, and there's some other artists in here that have also contributed. And I just, same thing was as with you. I want people to have room to create and so there, so when people go through every little nook and cranny, there's like a really intentional experience that might elicit like a question or curiosity, kind of like a Willy Wonka or something. But even with the tapes in here, I have a lot of tapes in here that the curation of the tapes is like very intentional. And I have like, you know, I might have pumping iron on the wall, and then I might have like, you know, like a blaxploitation movie or like a movie that is notorious and maybe has offended people, because I want there to be discussion in there. So hopefully it's an experience. And I'm still trying to figure out how to make that experience possible for others on the internet.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see wherever it goes, man. I mean, as soon as I saw what you were mentioning, the other artist stuff, like the stuff that you posted of the Nick Gazin, is it? That was so cool, man. That style just shouted out to me. And it's that kind of stuff where I'm like, man, to be like side by side with this kind of art that's like totally awesome. Wacky and cool, totally like in a lot of ways like quite, you know, different to my own kind of stuff, but like the kind of stuff that I look at and I'm like, this makes my eyes happy.
Oh, good. Yeah, he is super talented as well. And I will send him laser discs. I have a laser disc collection and I'll be like, basically do whatever you want. It's really exciting to see what he comes back with and to put it on the wall. And the colors again, I'm just really grateful for people like you and Nick that take the time to want to contribute and hopefully it's rewarding. It's a rewarding return for you too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it's a treat to get to do and to get to be part of this. And I honestly will be so excited the day that, you know, hopefully things line up and I'm able to actually, get to walk in and experience this in person myself. Like, I'd be just giddy to actually be in there and just nerd out and just look at all the things. Oh.
Gotta happen. You gotta stop by. We'll pop a tape in.
Yes.
I'm actually redoing the room right now. I'm putting I finally found a side loader TV VCR combo. So that's gonna go into the wall, which hasn't even on the internet. I don't think there's any pictures of that wall, but so I'm trying to create even more of a experience so you can sit at the front desk, which is kind of like a bar. It's sit down. Pop a tape in, talk about movies or wrestling and watch it. So hopefully that's what I want people to do is like, you know, like when somebody comes over, like look around and then like, oh yeah, let's pop this in. And then you pop it in and then, it's playing in the background as over a conversation kind of thing.
Yeah, that's so great. I mean, as a lover of cinema and especially your weirder kind of stuff, that's the whole deal. And getting to like bond over that kind of stuff too, I think super cool. So
yeah,
I don't know. There's something that's like so magical about it. But I also wanted to put over how great the put together a photo shoot. A really great looking professional photo shoot of this room, and dude, these pictures came out so great. As soon as you sent them over to me, like my jaw was on the floor of how cool this looked, because I'd seen some pictures of the environment that I thought was like so awesome just from the pictures that you'd already sent me. With the chewed bubble gum color scheme, like I just love how that ties everything together so well. But then seeing how good this photo shoot came out, and then getting to see that logo as part of it. Oh man! Please tell me about the process of the photo shoot.
Well, that's. A friend of mine, Amarin Colosi, super talented photographer, and she's somebody that I produce photo shoots, and so she's somebody who I've worked with for a number of years now. And so when I was time to shoot this room, I was thinking, well, it's always tough. You want to like ask a friend to contribute. You know, we're all so busy in our like with our work and our daily lives. So it's like, I was like, gosh, you know, her and her husband came over, our friend Luke, and we were hanging out, and they were talking about, they're both artists as well, and they were talking about, oh yeah, you could light it this way, because there's no light, there's no windows in here.
That tripped me up when I originally looked at this. I was like, man, whenever they've done this and that afternoon light is just shining through in just the most perfect way.
And then
I realized when I read your, you know, thing that this was all like artificial light, and that just like was even more mind blowing to me how well that came about.
Well, it is and it isn't, because so they were here and they were like, oh, they were kind of like talking about how you could light it. And that was a while ago. And then I think it was like, in December, or whatever, I thought, okay, I need to get this room shot. And so I asked her, I was like, hey, would you be down to shoot this? And she's like, yeah, of course. And so, that experience was also kind of like, I didn't want to produce it. I wanted it to be like friends hanging out, you know, making something. But I knew, like, I was like, oh, let's have it be maybe, like there's these magazines, books called Apartamento, like that capture creative people in their homes. And so that was kind of, I think, maybe an inspiration. But I think when she got here and we were looking at the space, obviously it's a very challenging room to shoot. And that's like, it's amazing what she came up with the limitations this room has, especially. But it was just a fun experience. We were just like, let's try this, let's try that. And she actually, there are windows in here, but they've been blocked out, and they have they've been like blacked out. They're like, you know, there's the video plant in one of them, and then the other one is a TV. And so she was thinking it would be cool to blast light in, and I was like, let's do that. And so that was her idea, and it came through in a really cool way. And I think it gives it this kind of, I don't know, like mysterious kind of, I don't know. It makes it maybe the room feel bigger than it is, which is exciting. So yeah, that was her idea. And I think we're going to do another one. I want to have like a fog machine in here. And
nice.
There are other parts of the room that haven't been photographed. There's the, every video store when I grew up had like the red room with like adult movies. And so I was like, well, what if this one had a room of the 1990s direct-to-video erotic thrillers? We could do that. And so that room is really small, though. I don't know how we'll capture that, but that room is like a vaporwave room. When you go in there, there's like neon lights, and so that'll be a challenge as well. But there's a lot of stuff that hasn't really been captured, and so we'll see. But yeah, definitely, Amryn's an awesome, super talented photographer, and again, really grateful that she was down to take the photos and contribute. So yeah,
came out so great, and yeah, I cannot wait to see the more pictures as they come out. I mean, the whole concept of like erotic thrillers.
Yeah.
So great.
Well, dude, so that is a thing. So, I mean, the video store I worked at, the Movie Shack, they had in the back, there was like an NC-17 section. And that had movies that it was like mainly erotic thrillers. And then there was like movies like Man Bites Dog, like movies that were NC-17 that weren't even really associated with that kind of genre. And in the back was like the bigger box, like, you know, adult films. But what's happened with those, the reason I have, okay, those movies, there's kind of a phenomenon with those, kind of similar to film noir in the 40s, where in the 90s, these like, you know, like Roger Corman and these smaller studios just mass produced all these erotic thrillers, and so many of them were made. And for a long time, I think people considered them to be, there was the word like softcore porn is the phrase for that. A lot of people consider them to be, but a lot of these movies are, they're essentially neo-noir movies with these over the top, like campy, almost soap opera aspect, sex scenes, if you will. And so a lot of the ones in that room are like, a lot of them are from like the female perspective. It's a different thing than maybe people thought of them as being, if that makes sense at all. There's a really good documentary called We Kill for Love that's about these movies and how they kind of started off to be one thing and kind of became something else when, you know, like the internet became what it is. But yeah, I look at a lot of these movies as neo-noirs. I
absolutely love that genre as well. So this is just speaking to such a place of nerddom now for me.
These movies are like, they're straight up neo-noir films with just, you know, really campy sex scenes. And I don't know, they're fascinating. And like we've talked about, I'm always trying to find, like, I love camp. I'm a big John Waters fan.
Nice.
I don't care. I want to find the most obscure thing I can. And these movies, a lot of them are pretty mesmerizing and pretty weird. But I think they're different than maybe what people initially think of them to be. Now, of course, there are other, you know, the movies that got out of hand in the later later years when Basic Instinct is a studio version of what these movies are. And
yeah.
So anyhow, yeah, that room is kind of just there for fun. And all the movies in there, you know, the ones that you saw at Blockbuster or Hollywood. And it's a funny little thing for people. It's funny to see their reaction. Like, what? What is this?
Dude, the red velvet curtain and the mystery of this curtain. It's such a cool visual. I love it.
I'm glad that you got a kick out of that.
So what is also in this place that I really want to make sure we talk about is the physical like video plant, puppet art, like creation that you've put together that I love so much. And so that was, you know, obviously a big part of the, you know, references and stuff that, you know, I was going by for the logo itself. I'm not sure, did you have like a smaller version of that? And then this one that we're seeing here was created later? Or please tell us about that.
Yeah, I had a little one that was a plastic toy that I found on the internet that I put like a single tape in. Maybe I'll put a photo of that on. Now that I have this Instagram, I got to start like capturing stuff. And then I wanted it to be a bigger, like more like in your face living thing. And so my wife and I made this from scratch. We found some like recipes online for how to play with like styrofoam and like movie makeup and that kind of stuff. So we went to craft stores and bought the teeth and got the molding and everything is handmade. We just, the two of us did it. We bought an airbrush gun. We found like, sweat to make the teeth. We gave the teeth like tartar and gingivitis. And then, every element of it was handmade. We found a place to like liquid sweat. I don't know. When you see it in person, it's pretty cool to see. It wasn't meant to be like an Audrey homage. I love that people, I mean, that is what it is, but it's also kind of its own thing. Kind of the idea of like, let's see what this thing becomes, but it's definitely based on that design. It is based on that, but the intention wasn't to like make a duplicate of Audrey 2, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, like it's its own thing. I just love the lips and the texture of them and the, I don't know, everything about it, the color and that sort of like sheen. I don't know if that's like the sweat kind of thing. It's so cool.
Thanks.
It almost reminds me a bit of I used to love R-Real Monsters as a kid, the cartoon, Nickelodeon kind of one. And one of the characters off of that, she has these big, ridiculous, like, lips with the sharp kind of teeth. Very, very cool and weird and offbeat in that same way. But I also love the actual video plant lettering that you've got on there. Is that like a sort of like... You had that like hand cut out like plastic kind of thing or what?
Oh, the lettering and the tape, the Japanese lettering or the
the kind of like a drippy video plant lettering on the thing that it's sitting on top of.
Yeah, that is plastic. And I had it laser cut. Yeah, so I went in Photoshop and I found the font and then I kind of bent it to make it drip a little more and doubled it up and then took it to a plastics house and then a laser cutter and they cut it for me. And that was kind of hard to actually get the sizing correct. Mm. But yeah, it came out good. I think that was inspired by, there's this band called Tobacco. Does like really, kind of experimental, weird pop music. And, their album covers have this logo. I'm sorry, not this logo, this dripping font. And I just thought, God, it looks so cool. So that was inspired from that band. And then, I just was like, can I do this on my own? So I put the font in and I wanted there to be something that like, cause I remember some people like came in there like, this room's called something. They're like, what's video plant? They're like, some people walk in here. It's funny. Like some people either get it or they don't, you know, like some people walk in and they're like, fuck yeah. Oh, sorry. I don't know if I can swear on this, but they walk in. Okay. They're like, yeah, dude, this fucking rules, you know? And then some people are just, honestly, I think they're just like, what the fuck? Like, who are you? What is this? You know, I mean, I definitely, when I was doing this room, dude, like when I was putting these shelves up and it was just this pink room, I definitely had moments where I was like, what am I doing right now? Like, what is this? And like the first thing I was so proud of that I put up was all these wrestling tapes. And there are people who, I'm pretty private, but like some friends would come over. I'm private, but I mask everything in humor. So it's like, it's the Andy Kaufman kind of thing. But people come in, they'd be like, oh, you're actually, you like wrestling? This is a real thing. And they're like, wow. So it's been wild to see the different interactions, but having the video plant like name under the plant, I think has helped tie it in for it to be this kind of like, okay, there's the poster as you walk in, and then here's the real life version of it. Okay, this is like an experience, this, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of the magic, I think, of it, of the part of people not being quite sure what this is kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I guess for yourself, when you're putting it together, like, I didn't even know what this is going to be kind of deal. But I mean, I think when I've like told people about it, and I've, it was saying like, it's so cool. Cause it's like a video store, but you can't rent anything or buy anything. It's more sort of like for you to be able to just experience, which I just love so much. I think it's so cool.
Thank you. I mean, it was really, I mean, honestly, it was meant to be, I wanted it to be like not on the internet. For a long time, I wouldn't let people take pictures. I was like, no, I also loved when people would come over. Cause I've been working on this for 2 years and this was like room was secret for a while. That's the level of like, that's the intensity I took. That's the level of intensity I took it.
Awesome.
Cause it's very, it's become like an art project in a way, but like sometimes when people come over, like, oh yeah, go through that red curtain. Cause there's two red curtains and they're like, what is this? And they'll walk in and they'll be like, what the hell? You know? And that's fun. And then, but I know I do, like, as a kid, just a connector to this, as a little kid, I watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And there's that scene where Gene Wilder's like, he's like it's when you first see Willy Wonka and he is like walking out. And then he like stumbles and does that. He has a cane and then he stumbles and does a backflip. Mm. And as a little kid, I thought, I was like, that is the coolest shit I've ever seen. Like, you know, like you're like, this guy walks with a cane. He's fragile. He's mysterious. And then he does this backflip. And I think I wanted this room to be like that. I wanted there to be. And also, like, you can't scratch and sniff anything and, like, have it taste like candy. But I do want that. I want that element with some of the tapes in here. I definitely have some tapes where it's, like, I want to catch people's eye. Like, what? Like, the wrestling wall. Like, you know,
yeah.
I love, I mean, I could just stare at these wrestling tapes and talk about them for hours. And I do by myself. I sit here and I talk. No, but, yeah, so. Hopefully this experience is rewarding for people who walk into it. And then now that it's on the internet and now that I'm talking about it publicly, I'm kind of like, oh boy. But yeah, it's a work of art but it's one for it's not tied to financial gain, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for the love of it. I really love the idea of it being like a madhouse playground of an eccentric kind of thing from that,
oh, yeah,
that Wonka perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I'm starting to try to work on little, those little cards that talk about the movies.
Mm. Oh, so
because there's definitely some in here that I try to, like, you know, it's like an opportunity to kind of try to be creative with writing and stuff, so. Everything's intentional, but everything's done with, like, I don't want there to be any pretentious qualities to it. I want it to be fun and like, kind of like everything has a little bit of a, like, a sense of humor with it. You know, like, it's not to be taken too seriously, if that makes sense. It is a room with red velvet curtains, with a video plant, with videotapes. yeah, so... Yeah,
I think that's great. I mean, for all of my stuff, I always say, you know, my the illustration or artwork or everything, it's all like made with love, and that is, in a sense, it's like sort of a bit of a cliched tagline, whatever kind of deal. But there's a real reality of it, you know, when you love something and you create something for the sake of, you know, doing it with just that complete, like, love and dedication kind of thing. And
yeah,
and that's exactly what I see here. So oh, cool. I think it's, like, so cool about it too.
You,
but it's undeniable. Well, really,
thanks again, thanks for the kind words. Yeah, and I'm excited to, you know, you and I have some other things we're gonna put out into the world that are gonna be happening in the store. A little tape series I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that I will say, like, there are times where I'm like, I just want to get this room done, because I keep thinking of new things to do with it. Like, oh, I'm gonna, like, hang fake plants on it, or I keep adding to it. And my wife is like, you just need to, like, it's never gonna be done. It's just gonna constantly be this, like, growing thing. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think I think putting it out there helps with that. If that makes sense at all.
Oh, for sure. It's kind of like an ever evolving, growing thing, which I think is so cool. I think the idea of putting it out there is a significant deal, because I know this has been a work in progress for you to get where you felt, you know, right about sort of, like, revealing it to the world kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, that's sort of like another sign of just, you know, how much, like, love and dedication you put into it, to where there's such a thoughtful, mindful kind of deal, this part of it, rather than just doing it for the sake of engagement or, you know, whatever those kind of tacky terms are. But I think it's so cool now. I mean, there's something that's like a great mystique of like what you were saying before, where it's this secret kind of deal where like only the select few who get to walk through get to experience it. But I think it is something that's really good that, you know, the greater audience of people are able to see this and be like, that's so darn cool. Like, dude, the amount of, like, comments that I even got for, like, the little kind of, like, preview that I put together of it once, you know, you were had done the launch of the Instagram page and everything. Everyone just seemed like overwhelmed by how cool it was. So I think everyone's just really stoked to be able to keep up with it and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Hopefully I've been so busy, but I need to start. The next step will be like sharing the tapes in here and sharing like what some of my favorite, you know, tapes are. I really want to highlight the movies and stuff that I think have been that aren't maybe talked about as much, that kind of thing. I do have a lot of the horror tapes, and I have a lot of tapes that happen to be rare, and I'm happy that I have those, and I was able to get them when I did. But there's also a lot of stuff in here, like more obscure stuff. I'm trying to think of course, I can't think of something off the top of my head, but you know, like looking, I'm actually overwhelmed right now as I look across the room at these tapes. But you know, I might do like one on like all the skate tapes of Spike Jonze. I might do something like that where I celebrate the skate videos of Spike Jonze, or the music video tapes of Chris Cunningham, because he was a big influence on me. He did the Aphex Twin videos and
amazing stuff.
Or I might do like a, you know, Ida Lupino section, you know, woman filmmaker who did film noir movies. I have a good, you know, I also have like the director section, like this week we'll talk about Spike Lee or something like that. So if that's interesting, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think it definitely is. I think the kind of people that are, you know, into this kind of stuff, like, you know, I'm just saying from my own perspective, that all sounds wonderful. And I think the kind of stuff that gets you down, like we were saying before, these weird little roads and rabbit holes that you didn't even really know existed is such a magical thing. So for you to be able to sort of like act as a bit of a, you know, a person to be able to be like, hey, did you know about this kind of thing, and like show some of your favorite, you know, excerpts of that, so cool. Like, you know, what you opened my eyes recently to the awesome psycho biddy genre that
the psycho biddies. So cool. I love those. I think we talked about like acid westerns, you know, these weird subgenres, action slashers, I don't know, these weird kind of cyberpunk movies, you know, these things that are widely, you know, you can learn about these things on an internet search, right? But like to curate a collection of tapes based on these little subgenres, that's been fun. When the room started, I had sections in here, but I realized that the tapes, once you bundled all the tapes together based on like the director's section and like the subgenre section and all that stuff, it didn't look very good because the colors, a lot of the tapes, like, and then once you got to the 90s, all the tapes were kind of black, like, you know, like a movie like Heat is just a black VHS tape cover, or like Jurassic Park is just, you know, there wasn't a lot of color just because of the way that those movies were, the, like, you know, mass produced for renting. So everything in here now is alphabetical, and that allows for like all the different colors to pop and all the different types of movies to kind of, it's kind of like a maze of sorts. So it is alphabetical, but you can kind of wander and see the movies in different areas, because I didn't want to have like a shrine, you know, I didn't want to have like an Andy Kaufman shrine or like a certain section for just like certain people. So now they can all kind of live and can be discovered. But amongst, you know, as they sit here on the shelves, there are some of the more obscure tapes. And unfortunately, those are the ones that people are interested in. It's usually the horror tapes. And I can understand why, because the covers are so cool.
A bit more bombastic, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one I have, like, what is that one? The last, I don't know, there's one tape. It was a studio release. The cover is just so violent and just in your face. And it's like, sometimes I'm like, I can't believe this tape was released. And I remember as a kid, like, walking to the video store and being like, wow, this is insane. I want to watch this, you know? It's kind of funny to relive that experience.
Man, I'm so excited to just see more of this. I mean, this might be a bit of a loaded question that might be difficult for you to answer. But in lieu of me, like often with the you know, wrestling artist interviews, I normally ask people, you know, who's their kind of favorite dude to draw or make art of. But like turning that to you and this like amazing you know, collection that you've put together, are there what it's maybe saying the one is probably a bit too tricky, but any that come to mind that the most like really close to your heart parts of your collection or you know, certain genre or anything like that?
There are some that, like, a lot of the tapes that I tried to track down early on were the ones that I remember staring at the video store. And like, you know, the Rainer Werner Fassbinder, he released a ton of movies, and the covers of his tapes, I remember they had like the Fassbinder collection. There were these purple striped tapes, and I just would stare at those, and eventually I started running them, and they were so eye-opening for me, and I had never seen movies like that. So his movies, I think, let's see here, some of the blaxploitation tapes that I have I'm a big fan of, because those were discovered in like the VHS era, if that makes sense. I didn't really think about it too much. For wrestling, there's definitely, I have some one of my favorite wrestling tapes. The Andy Kaufman I'm From Hollywood is a great wrestling tape. And I'm talking about the tapes that aren't like the pay-per-views. The Three Faces of Foley is a favorite tape of mine.
Nice.
Monday Night Raw Prime Cuts is a really awesome tape. The Hulkamania 3 tape. I don't like Hulk Hogan, but that tape is awesome because it covers the storyline that leads up to when Macho Man became world champion. And I'm a big Randy Savage fan. That tape's just really cool.
The whole one with him and Liz and Hogan and the
oh yeah. Triangle, yeah. Mega powers and all that. It leads up to that.
Yeah.
And then, I also, the Invasion 92 tape with Ric Flair. That's the only Ric Flair tape that the WWF put out. And if you look at it's just kind of crazy. There's two matches on that. He wrestles Bret Hart and he wrestles Shawn Michaels, and they're awesome matches. They're like these gems on these tapes. They only came out on this tape. And it's not the match where Flair lost the title to Bret Hart. It's before that. And the storyline with, you know, the commentary talks about these upcoming wrestlers, and it's Ric Flair because it's really cool to experience that on that tape. So that for wrestling, that's kind of where that is. But in terms of, I mean, I'm also a big Rudy Ray Moore fan, and some of those tapes,
nice.
When I got them, those were hard to find. Now they're kind of, I think they're probably easy to find, but that's another thing is, some of the tapes that I tracked down when I tracked them down were really hard to find in like the mid, you know, like in 2013, 2014, but now like they're more, you know, VHS is a popular thing now. So, I'm kind of like, damn it. I really had a hard time tracking that down. Now there's like eight of them. But it's good though. I want people to see these movies.
I mean,
I guess
it goes both ways.
Yeah, totally.
Like you were saying, there's stuff where you know originally got it, and then now that it'd be insanely expensive. So I guess that's just the nature of collecting, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Man, well, I have had such a fun time doing this chat. I could definitely, I'll have to get you on down the road where we can talk maybe a bit more in depth on some of these genres.
Sure.
And, you know, I just have so much fun nerding out on this stuff, dude. And
likewise.
And I am so excited to see where this goes, and again to get to continue to make more stuff for it, and some of these like special take cover things that we've talked about. Man, I'm just so stoked for it all. And yeah, I absolutely love that it's all just sort of like a evolving kind of like thing that's just for the fun of it and just for the love of it. I think that's so cool.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Chris. That means a lot. And thanks for having me. And I apologize to all your listeners if I rambled a bit.
I think that probably be used to a bit of rambling by now.
Okay, well, good. Well, yeah, I hope it was worthwhile. And it certainly was for me. It's always fun chatting with you. So thanks again. And looking forward to the next time.
Dude, likewise, right back at you. One last time, everyone, head over to video.plant on the Instagram. Just so much cool stuff to enjoy there. And I'm sure a lot more of interesting stuff to keep up with in the future. But anything else you wanted to draw attention to?
I'm excited for Bryan Danielson versus Blue Panther.
Oh my gosh, dude, I haven't even had a chance to watch the big Dos Leontes show yet. but I've been looking forward to that one for a long time, and then hearing that this coming week we're finally getting the singles match between Danielson and Blue Panther, two of my very favorite wrestlers to ever do it. Obviously a big time dream match for Danielson. He's been wanting this match for at least, it feels like, 10 years or more. So, man, you and me both, very excited for that one. Very good excited. Call.
Other than that, though, no, thanks. No, that's it. I'm just excited for that. And I'm as excited to chat with you today. And thanks again, Chris.
Dude, my pleasure. Always so much fun. And I think this has been a really, really good chat. This is the exact stuff that the curator editions are about. Just nerding out on passion kind of things, I think. So it's been perfect. Thank you so much, my dude.
Yeah, thank you. Talk to you later.
Thanks, man. Talk later. Bye. All right, man. So good. I really enjoyed that. I'm sure you can tell there. I hope that you did as well. Again, a little bit different to normal. From I guess someone talking about their own wrestling art. I think it's. This is still really good. It's like kind of a little bit different, but I guess variety is the spice of life, as they say. I was so stoked with that. Thanks again, Richard. I absolutely love this project. I hope some of y'all could also connect with that kind of like love for old VHS rental stores and the whole nostalgia element to it, and just a love for physical media. All right. I definitely think we'll need to get Richard back on in the future to go a little bit more in depth on some of that stuff, but I think that was just delightful. I would like to give a big old thank you to the guys that allow me to put this show together, Social Suplex. You can check out socialsuplex.com. Great hub of all sorts of stuff, including a variety of other rad wrestling podcasts, from Keeping It Strong Style, the New Japan podcast, to All Things Elite, One Nation Radio, Tunnel Talk, Trish and Sarah. I think there's a show with two people of those names. Yeah, a lot of great stuff. Socialsuplex.com. So yeah, thanks guys for that. I also like to thank everyone for listening to this little old show every week, for hearing me in your ear holes. I appreciate the loyalty and the time commitment. I think that's super nice of you. I mean, if you enjoyed the show, a few things. Make sure you are subscribed, if you're listening on iTunes, to the actual Wrestling Art with Chris Things channel. If you're listening on that channel, I get not a large amount of money, but some advertising money, perhaps enough to buy a coffee once a month. So maybe I could get two coffees if everyone subscribes. I don't know. So you can do that. They do have donations. There's a donation link on the page where you are likely listening to this show as well. If you ever want to give me a little tip, shout me a coffee, anything like that. More than anything, jump on christhings.com.au. My bread and butter with all this stuff, as you might have guessed, is the art things. I am a full-time artist, so I appreciate every little bit of support that I get. On the website, you can find a variety of all the stuff we're talking about, all the wrestling match of the week prints, original artworks, all sorts of prints of different artworks that I've done over the years. Or if there's something that I've posted to my Instagram at Chris Things and it's somehow not on the website, well, boy, swing me a message and I'll actually, you know, custom process that order for you. And yeah, get that bad boy up on your wall. I also eagerly do commissions. I love doing commissions. I, you know, love being able to bring people's weird and wonderful ideas to life. I actually just finished one this week, an actual physical painting that I'll be sending out to someone. This is actually of a very excellent wrestling match and event that I've sort of done a custom Chris Things poster of. I'll keep a little bit of mystery for it when I finally am able to share it once the customer receives it. But yeah, I love doing commissions, man. So if you would like to commission something, whether it's just a little something for yourself, whether it's like a gift for like a loved one, you know, a wrestling art or just a general art of their dog or something, I would love to do that for you guys. So please hit me up if you have any commission stuff that you'd like me to do. That's it. Even if not, I am just appreciative of y'all listening. I'll say at the start of the show these days, welcome friends. I think of all of you guys as friends. I think most friendships are generally a bit more, you want them to go a bit more two ways, but, you know, it's not a perfect world, so I think this is just quite good anyway. But I appreciate every one of you. If you ever want to swing me a message and say, hey, let me know what you got going on, I'd love to have a little chin wag, but thanks so much, guys. I think that's the end of our show today. And I will see you next week. Bye. I do the hammer.